This is a best of edition of Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
This is my top priority in the Senate. I love the tax bill. I think the tax bill will make an important difference for the country. But when the winds, the political winds shift, we never leave taxes alone. When we did comprehensive tax reform 30 years ago, it lasted 4 years. What I want to do is make a lasting contribution to the country. And by appointing and confirming these strict constructionists to the courts who are in their late 40s or early 50s, I believe working in conjunction with the administration, we're making a generational change in our country that will be repeated over and over and over down through the years. Well, we're going to continue to confirm judges all year. You know, the Congress doesn't stop with the elections. It goes until the end of the year. We're going to do 6 more next week, which will bring us to 21. I'm processing them as quickly as they come out of the Judiciary Committee, and the administration is sending them up rapidly. I don't know what the final number is, but my goal, Hugh, is to confirm all the circuit and district court judges that come out of committee this calendar year.
That was Majority Leader Senator Mitch McConnell talking with Hugh Hewitt on his radio program. He went on to say that if necessary, he would keep the Senate in session through New Year's Eve as long as they have to fight to get these nominations in order. The problem is the words maybe don't comport with the actions, and that's what I want to talk about today. There is a new website called Make Congress Work Again, and that's the title for a reason. As it turns out, the Senate especially is producing precious little work product for all the bragging of Mitch McConnell in that clip. Well, what is the truth here? Is he really pushing to get nominees out? Is it the Republicans' fault? Is it the Democrats' fault? What's happening in Congress, both houses, that nothing seems to be getting done, or precious little? I've asked Wesley Denton to join me. Wes is the former communications director for Senator Jim DeMint, who was a champion to so many of us, and now he is with the Conservative Partnership Institute, still working with former Senator DeMint, and I've asked him to join us. Good morning, Wes. Thank you. Thank you for your time this morning already.
Andy, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You know, I am. Let's just start with judges. There's no question that Senator McConnell has had some accomplishments. We have a good Supreme Court justice in Gorsuch. He certainly did push that through, and there have been some good nominees. But do you think that his description of Hugh Hewitt is an accurate one on what he's accomplishing on judges?
Well, they're certainly moving forward on judges at a decent pace. The problem is that judges aren't the only nominees pending before the Senate. The president just made mention over the weekend, he has over 300 nominees to presidential appointed positions waiting confirmation, 300. And if they're going to keep up this pace of doing 4 to 6 nominees a week, he won't get all of his nominees confirmed by the time he leaves office. And so, you know, a lot of people are worried about the deep state in the swamp and former Obama holdovers holding key positions in the Trump administration. The reason for that is because Trump can't get his nominees through the Senate, and there seems to be no sense of urgency. Now, on the judges, they're doing a decent job on that, but they could do a much faster job. And in fact, they're often not forthcoming about the true information about how they're working on the judges. For instance, you just heard in that clip, Senator McConnell said, we're getting 6 judges confirmed this coming up week. Well, guess what? They did 2 judges last night. Those 2 judges were Durbin appointees. and they were passed 91 and 90 to nothing with no Democrat opposition because they're Democrat appointees. So taking credit for putting Democrat judges into the circuit court, and I'm not sure why we're doing that anyway, but why they're spending precious time on that when they can't get Trump's nominees through makes little to no sense.
It doesn't make, and just to clarify what you just said, because you and I are just, some of these terms and people are common to us, but you're saying Senator Dick Durbin's pick, who was a nightmare senator from my home state of Illinois, his picks for judicial nominees, two of them got through, and there's bragging being done about getting judicial nominees through, and that's not the thing about which we should be bragging. Really, Wes, why would they pass through Durbin's nominees? Why would they do that? Why would they do that at voting 91 in favor?
This often happens through different presidential administrations that for key boards that have presidential appointees, they'll agree to do one Democrat appointee for every two Republicans to keep somewhat of a balance, even though there's a majority of the party in power on that appointed board. And sometimes they do this with judicial courts as well. They'll do mostly majority, but they'll do some minority as a as an olive branch to the minority. I don't know what the Democrats have done to deserve an olive branch. They've obstructed every single nominee that's come down the pike, and it's really frustrating. You heard what the Senate Majority Leader said in that clip, or I think you had said that he made the promise, and I've heard it as well, that we'll stay in through New Year's Eve. Well, how about staying in to a Friday? We don't need you to fight after the election when it's possible to lose the House and possibly even lose Senate seats. We want you to fight now when you have the majority and you have the ability to get things done. Why are they keep coming in on Monday night and then they leave on Thursday afternoon, and they basically work 2.5 days a week and they're not getting all the work done. They should stay in every weekend, every holiday, get the president's nominees passed, get the spending bills done, fund the border wall, and people are frustrated.
Yeah, let's reiterate that. They come in on Monday night, but they don't go to work. What, they come in at noon on Tuesday and work and then leave at noon on Thursday, something like that, right?
That's right. They have what we call a bed check vote in the Senate on Monday nights, where it's a non-controversial vote, like last night, the two Democratic judges that were obviously going to pass. They could have done it by UC, but they had a vote on it so that people would know that they need to be back in town on Monday night, but a lot of people still don't come back in until Tuesday morning. And then they have their final votes Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon, and then they leave for the weekend, and they usually have 4-day weekend. And what's frustrating is you turn on the TV during the week, during Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, what you'll see is the presiding officer of the Senate calling the roll. You know, like you're in homeroom class in grade school, where they're just calling off names to see if people are in attendance. That's called a quorum call. And they're actually not doing any work on the Senate floor. They're not passing nominees. They're not debating legislation. They're not holding amendments. They're just wasting floor time until they have a cloture vote that's been agreed to between McConnell and Schumer. There's no debate on the border wall. There's no debate on stopping Planned Parenthood funding. There's no debate on ending catch and release. There's no debate on the Iran deal and or on fixing our trade policies. They're just wasting time.
So you're saying the time that they're even claiming that they're working, they're not working. You're talking about the 2.5 days?
Yeah. If you know, anybody turn on C-SPAN. Sometimes there's some person giving a floor speech every now and then with an empty floor with no senators in attendance except one or two. But for the most part, they're in what's called a quorum call, which is a way to, quote unquote, be in session without actually doing any business. And it's a bit of a, if you've ever tuned in and you hear them calling the names very slowly, like one name per 15 minutes, that's because if they got through all of the names and the quorum wasn't in attendance, they would have to send the sergeant at arms to the police, basically the Capitol Police, to bring senators to the floor, because the Senate's supposed to be always debating. And so that's a trick of the majority in power to eat up floor time, is to just call the roll very slowly. So that's what they do. That's probably about 70-80% of what they do during the week is call the roll.
Meanwhile, Senator McConnell's bragging about getting nominees through. It really is pretty appalling. Also, we have not talked about the breaks they've been taking. They took a long Easter recess, and then what, 2 weeks ago or 10 days ago, they took another 10 days off, and that happened to take place, that break, during the Kentucky Derby, as I understand it. Is that right?
That's right. So they, whenever the Congress takes recesses, they always try to time it to an actual holiday, like an Easter break or Christmas break or a Jewish holiday or the 4th of July or George Washington's birthday. So they just took a 10-day break. They took a full week off in the weekend from Thursday to the next Tuesday with a week in between. And, you know, the only holidays there were Cinco de Mayo and then maybe the Star Wars, May the 4th. So, you know, asking around the staff, they said that in the Senate staff that the reason they took the recess was because of the Kentucky Derby from the majority leader's home state. I don't know if that's 100% true or not, but it's the only much celebrated event during that entire recess.
It's just, it's really shocking. But it has to be said, and I don't think it's said enough, Wes, and so that's why I've asked you to join me today. Let me just tell you that there is a website, makecongresswork.org, makecongresswork.org, where you can go on and sign it. I've certainly signed it, and it basically says, we, the undersigned, are sick and tired of secret bills that nobody reads, obstruction of presidential nominations, reckless special interest spending and debt, constant government shutdown drama, and too many vacations with too little work. Congress should delay August recess until government funding legislation has been openly debated in the House and Senate with a full opportunity for votes on amendments and is approved by both houses and sent to the president. And the Senate should delay August recess until sufficient progress has been made confirming the president's nominees. Now, let me just say, there are a ton of people that have signed this, also a group of conservative leaders that have signed a letter to Congress demanding such. Any response to that letter, Wes?
Yeah, I think now not response from the leadership of either house, but we've had over 16 senators to date, led by Senator David Perdue of Georgia, have basically crafted their own letter to Leader McConnell based off of that pledge. And they have said, we'd be willing to stay here and work weekends, work holidays, and not leave Washington until we get the president's nominees passed and we get the spending policies done that we promised in the last election. And that includes people that are up for election that have a reason to go home and campaign, like Senator Dean Heller or Deb Fischer or Ted Cruz, who have real races back at home. But they're saying, we'd rather be here and get the policies done. There's no reason for us to keep adjourning every weekend. So we are seeing momentum. I think there's an effort being built up in the House. And so we're very hopeful that there will be some change, but there won't be change without people hearing it or members hearing it from their constituents.
We only have a couple of minutes before the break, Wes, but I'm curious because if a Republican, probably if Mitch McConnell were sitting here, which he probably will not ever sit with me because he knows I'm not a big fan, he would say, hey, it's the Democrats. They're obstructing. They're demanding, 36 hours debate on each candidate, each judicial candidate. And you just don't understand. We don't. Senator McCain is not in with us, and we don't have. We have a very thin margin, and so there are a lot of reasons. Would that be a reason why these judicial nominees and other nominees are not getting through?
Well, certainly the Democrats are obstructing, but one of the reasons they continue to obstruct at a record pace is because they face no blowback for it. There's been no punishment for them or any pain been inflicted on them for having done this. It's just basically a gentleman's agreement between McConnell and Schumer. Okay, you choose to obstruct, we'll allow you to obstruct. They haven't really pushed back on it. What they could do and what they
have
Wes, done to
hold that thought. Hold that thought, because I'm going to have you talk about what they could do on the other side of this break, if that's okay.
You got it.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, you know, there are real consequences. There are real consequences to you and I, American citizens, for this dereliction of duty in the Congress, and it's happening in the House as well in a different way. I want to turn to that as well, but stay with me. Wes Denton is my guest. Again, the website is makecongresswork.org. Makecongresswork.org. Go and sign it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
This is a best of edition of Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
Late today, after a discussion with Speaker Paul Ryan and Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, President Trump signed off. Press Secretary Sarah Sanders saying the president supported the bill because it includes more funds to rebuild the military, such as the largest pay raise for our troops in a decade, more than 100 miles of new construction for the border wall, and other key domestic priorities.
You ready to do the snow, huh?
Congress didn't have time for a snow day with the clock ticking to finish up a $1.3 trillion spending package.
I'm proud to announce it will meet a number of vitally important objectives.
Some of the final pieces put the puzzle together, including $2 billion in new money for school safety measures, a bipartisan proposal tightening up background checks for firearms purchases, and $1.6 billion for the president's border wall. There's also $4.7 billion to address the opioid epidemic. Republicans succeeded in keeping Obamacare stabilization money out of the deal, and President Trump gets a win on keeping the Gateway Tunnel project between New York and New Jersey from being given priority status. But lawmakers were steamed about how the deal went down. Louisiana Senator John Kennedy told Fox, quote, "I think the whole process sucks. I think whoever designed this isn't qualified to run a food truck." And he's not alone.
Well, it's $1.3 trillion in spending, and you have four people deciding. And it's not a good way to do business, and I hope we can do it better in the future because it's just designed. It's not very transparent.
A former House budget chair blasted the Senate for creating a mess.
We passed the budget here in this House. We passed appropriation bills. It is the Senate that cannot get their act together. And then we come to this place where we do this huge spending bill that has not been negotiated between the House members and the Senate members, but just a small group of people.
Top Democrats signaled some relief that in the final hours, the impasse seems to have broken.
I don't believe we're going to have a shutdown. I think if necessary, God forbid, a continuing resolution. But I'd like to see it completed this week.
That was Mike Emanuel, and that was probably about 6 weeks ago, and that was when the $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill was passed by the Senate and passed to the president who signed it. It was a boondoggle for Democrats, and yet you heard Mitch McConnell talk about how proud he is of it. How is it that we continue to have these major, massive spending bills passed by a Republican Congress? They're even now proud of it. And they tell us that if they can't pass it, the government will shut down. There's no discussion, no debate about the issues. And then it's kind of like Nancy Pelosi said, we find out what's in it after they've signed it. Wes Denton is my guest. And Wes, of course, is with a Conservative Partnership Institute, which is an entity founded by former Senator Jim DeMint. And he's also been a big part in establishing this website, which is makecongresswork.org. Makecongresswork.org. So, Wesley, we have this, just for instance, $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill. How does that relate to what we've been talking about? Congress not, let's talk about the Senate, not working and not operating the way they should be. How is that contributing to this mess of a bill?
Well, I think what you've seen is what that did, the omnibus spending bill, was wake up the White House to what's really going on. They've been giving a lot of leash to the Congress, hoping that they get the agenda done legislatively. They had been taking their word that the spending bill was going to include the president's priorities. And then what you saw was they jammed the president. It was a secret deal with Schumer, Pelosi, McConnell, and Ryan and their staff in the room. It didn't go through committee. It didn't have debate. It didn't have any opportunity for amendment on the floor. It was passed at the last minute, and they told the president, sign this or shut down the government. And we did some decent wins in it, but I'm sorry, we couldn't get the border wall. We still have to fund Planned Parenthood, and we had to spend egregiously on liberal policy priorities. But if you don't do this, the government's going to shut down. It's going to be a fiasco. And that's what angered him. And he said, I will never again sign a bill like this. He feels like he has been had, and he has demanded no more omnibuses, no more last-minute spending deals. And that's what this push is really trying to support the president and is all about, something that conservatives have been saying for some time, which is why all these fake last-minute fights when we know these deadlines are coming up, we know the policies that we want, why aren't our leadership and our committees working on this months in advance and allowing a full debate and giving the president an opportunity to sign it or veto it if it's a bad bill. And so that's the intent here, is to say, let's not go through the spooky theater again. Let's not have these fake fights of, sorry, we forgot to do the spending until the last minute. We know we have to do spending. It runs out at the end of September, so they should finish their spending before they go home for August break. And if they don't fund the government before August break, then they haven't done their job and they shouldn't go home. And that's what these 16 senators led by David Perdue, including Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and others, are saying in the Senate. And that's what over 90 conservative leaders signed this letter that's at makecongresswork.org. And they're saying no more of this. We have to have, this is what we've always been told would be conservative nirvana for policy, which is, as long as if we just get the House and the Senate and the presidency, we can get our policy through. But instead, what we saw in February with the omnibus bill is with a Republican House and Senate and White House, we got a Democrat spending bill. How did that happen?
And the second time. It's the second time since President Trump was elected that this has happened. You know, Wes, I guess the question, and you don't know the answer, I doubt, but still interesting to discuss, is this just laziness on the part of Republican leadership for all the reasons we described, all of the breaks they're taking, the short work weeks, or does it comport to their agenda?
It's a number of things. I think in truth, unfortunately, there are a lot of Republicans that just don't believe in the Republican platform, and they will run as conservatives but govern as moderates or liberals and be just fine with that, and they're more concerned with power than policy. But you also have just a general, they want to go through the easiest way possible, the least pain. And so the easiest way possible is what they're doing now, which is very little, and just blaming the Democrats. That's easy. But what's more difficult is to lead your caucus and fight for them to stay in town to fight against the Democrats and suffer the mocking of the liberal media press and to push through and to get these priorities done. The interesting thing is, and you and I have seen this for years, they keep saying there's nothing they can do. They can't speed things up. They're, you know, our hands are tied. But when a conservative wants to have a conservative policy debated or brought up on the floor, or he tries to extend the time, suddenly they find it within the rules to squash him. So in the omnibus is a great example. They keep saying, well, we can't stop the Democrats. They hold all the power here, and they can delay. But when Rand Paul tried to filibuster the spending bill back in February, he was shut down after an hour of debate, even though technically there were supposed to be 30 hours of debate. And the reason is because we conservatives have been saying this on the judicial fight, the 30 hours of debate is a maximum that is allowed to the minority to obstruct. It's not a minimum. And they're supposed to only use those 30 hours if they're speaking on the floor, and multiple members have to come down at one-hour intervals. And so Rand Paul was leading a one-man filibuster, so he came down to the floor at midnight and spoke for 1 hour. And after his hour was up, they voted on the bill. And they didn't give him UC like they do to the Democrats in the judicial fight to carry out 30 or 29 other hours of floor time. And so we've seen this. They shut down Rand after an hour. Why won't they shut down the Democrats who aren't even coming to the floor to make cases against these nominees? They're just making agreements to waste 30 hours of time. And so it's very frustrating.
It is frustrating. All right, so we have sort of fleshed out what's happening with judicial nominees languishing, and then nominees like Senator Dick Durbin's leftist judges getting through with 91 votes. That's not Mitch McConnell's fault, but he is calling for the vote and getting them through quickly. But let's talk about something you mentioned, but we didn't really sit on it very much, and that was the nearly 300 presidential nominees. You know, I know, Wes, that there are some really key positions, for instance, at the Justice Department. I think the Civil Rights Division. Terrible appointees sitting there, hundreds, if not thousands of people put in place by the Obama administration, still doing. They're doing whatever they're doing behind closed doors to undermine this president. And these nominations are languishing. I just gave an example. Give us another example of what's not being done because they're not getting the nominations through.
Well, I mean, I think probably the best example that we've had over the last year of it's not just the Democrats and that are obstructing was Russ Vogt over at worked on at the House and the Senate for over a decade. He was a leader at Heritage Action, and he was appointed by President Trump to be the number two in command under Mick Mulvaney at the OMB last April. His nomination was delayed until just 2 months ago, I believe, in February or March, when he finally passed. Almost a full year passed before he was confirmed. And the reason wasn't because of Democrat obstruction. The reason was Senator John Cornyn of Texas. He made it very clear he was holding Rust to get more money for hurricane relief in Texas. Now, that may be his prerogative to do, but this has happened with Cory Gardner on personal legislative fights in Colorado with Trump judges. And this has happened in a number of different places where Republicans are obstructing the president's nominees. And what ends up happening is there seems to be no passion amongst this Senate and this Congress to defend and fight for this president. And we all know how they all felt about the campaign, and they tried to keep their distance, and they've tried to make amends since the election. But it seems some personality differences and just people being overly cautious and refusing to work together to get the common good done for conservative policies and conservative nominees, that's not winning out. And unfortunately, it just seems to be some personal grievances and some just laziness on the part of this Congress.
You know, which brings me to this point, which I make almost every morning, Wes, and that's why the midterms are so important. We really, 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 really need to clean House and Senate. We need to clean them and make sure we get serious, committed conservatives in those seats. And by the way, makecongresswork.org is that website, makecongresswork.org. We only have just a few minutes left, Wes, but let's just at least touch on the House. We've talked a lot about the Senate not working, but how does the House compare then? Are they working?
Well, they've been doing better, obviously. I mean, the House has different rules. The minority is not allowed to obstruct indefinitely in the House, but the House has not used their full power of the majority as they could have. And I think one of the best examples of that is what we're dealing with now in immigration. The head of the Committee of Jurisdiction, Congressman Goodlatte, produced a pretty decent immigration bill last year that included all the president's priorities on ending catch and release, ending chain migration, building the border wall, and made some concessions on DACA that a lot of us may not be comfortable with, but it went through committee. It never came to a vote on the House floor. Leadership never brought it to a vote. They kept negotiating with the Democrats. So I don't know why, after Republicans have the majority and the Republicans put a bill through the committee, it never came to the floor. Now we find out that in the middle of the election year, instead of getting the spending done and the nominees done in the Senate, the House is considering allowing a discharge petition on a full-out amnesty bill that doesn't just deal with the DACA recipients, but expands it to millions of others. That could actually come to a vote on the House floor. And now you can't stop people from signing a petition per se with discharge position. What that is the ability of people not in leadership to say that we have 218 votes, a majority, that want a bill to come to the floor. What they are actually discharging is a rule called a Queen of the Hill rule. And the way they're trying to be a little cute about this, saying, look, we're not saying we want to pass amnesty. We're saying we want to have called a Queen of the Hill strategy, where we put four bills on the floor and we can have an enforcement only bill. We can have a DACA only bill. We can have a fuller amnesty bill, and we can have another bill. And everybody can have their say, but whatever bill gets the most votes is the one that wins out and goes to the Senate. Well, we all know with all of the Democrats and a handful of moderates that they could probably get the most votes for an amnesty bill. And that's what it's designed to do. Now, the leadership is not helpless in this. They would have to twist arms of more liberal members and tell them they would lose their committee seats, so they would lose funding from the party organizations for reelect if they do this, because it would hurt the party and it's the wrong policy and it gets the Republican platform. But to date, there's been no punishment for moderates that are trying to push this amnesty bill on the floor. So, you know, it's happening on both sides, unfortunately. We should be focused on the priorities that people got elected on, but we still seem to get locked up in these liberal policy debates.
Yes, and it seems the worst spin on it to me, Wesley, is you have Mitch McConnell bragging about all he's doing on judicial nominations and bragging that he's going to keep them in session, you know, through New Year's Eve if he has to get them through. But we know full well that while he actually could do something, now he's giving them taking tons of vacation, working 2.5 days a week. Meanwhile, we have Paul Ryan, who claims he's not in favor of this bill that will make DACA amnesty a reality, and yet he's doing nothing, practically speaking, to stop this discharge petition. The hypocrisy is tough to take, and that's why we're asking you to go to this website, makecongresswork.org. makecongresswork.org. And by the way, don't forget to vote in these primaries. That's the best thing you could possibly do. Wesley Denton, again, we thank you so much, Wesley, a Conservative Partnership Institute, always, for your expertise.
Thank you, Sandy. God bless you and your listeners.
Yeah, same to you. All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
You're listening to a best of edition of Sandy Rios in the Morning. This is a best of edition of Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The influence of media is so very powerful over a person.
American Family Association and the family of Anna Bright want to warn you about the Netflix program 13 Reasons Why.
I really feel in my heart, with all my soul, that that show contributed to her passing.
After binge-watching season one of 13 Reasons Why, 14-year-old Anna Bright committed suicide in the same manner depicted on the show.
To portray suicide, first of all, as an option, is not a good thing. To portray it graphically, it leaves you vulnerable to the enemy's attack, which I think it definitely did for our daughter.
She took a permanent solution to a temporary situation.
Help protect our teens by signing the AFA petition urging Netflix to pull season one and cancel the upcoming season two of 13 Reasons Why. You can see Anna's story and sign the petition at afa.net. That's afa.net.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. 13 Reasons Why is a Netflix series. They've just completed their first year, but the second season is beginning tomorrow. It's beginning tomorrow. Tim Wildman, the president of the American Family Association, has written a letter to them asking for a meeting, warning them about what we know about the results, what's happened, the tragedy that's come from this particular series. And it was ignored. And so that's why we're asking for your help. And let me just say, the first season of 13 Reasons Why is based on a young adult novel. The novel and the series revolve around the suicide of a teenager, Hannah Baker, who leaves behind cassette tapes that blame 13 different people as the reason she ended her life. The tapes are her means of revenge, her power over them after death. And in the first series, it's full of gratuitous profane language, excessive drug and alcohol use by high school students, homosexuality, empty friendships, bullying, violence, graphic sex, including two rape scenes, one which is likened to soft porn, and a full-on, raw, very real and gruesome 3-minute depiction of a teenage girl committing suicide. And as a result of this, my next guest, I'm sure cannot even listen to that, as awful as it sounds to our ears. It's so very personal to Patrice Bright, because she and her husband came home to find their precious daughter, Anna, 14, having imitated the character on 13 Reasons Why and taking her own life. Patrice, first of all, thank you for having the courage to speak out today about this, and thank you for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Patrice, you've got a lot of courage, I have to tell you. This is not easy. And you know what? As a mother, I had a daughter who I lost, not in the same way, but let me just tell you that before we start talking here.
I'm so sorry.
So this is not easy. You know, I saw a picture of Anna. She looks so young. I mean, she was a young, to me, she was very pretty, but a young 14-year-old. We're not talking about a girl that looked 21, were we?
No, ma'am. She was beautiful. She was very innocent looking.
Yeah, she was. I agree. I was stunned. Actually, I didn't even know she was 14. when I saw her picture. And now you say that she binged watched 13 Reasons Why. How did you know that?
We actually didn't find out about her watching the program and binge watching the program until after her death. We had the Netflix records pulled, but evidently she had watched it 2 weeks before her death. We had come home from the vacation of a lifetime. We had been to Disney World. I also have a son that's 12 years old now, and he was the one who actually found Anna.
Ugh.
He was taking a little fidget spinner to her that he had bought for her because he wanted her to start her collection of fidget spinners. And so he came to our bathroom door, and he knocked and tried to get her to answer the door. And when she didn't answer the door, he opened the bathroom door, and she had filled the tub like Hannah Baker in the series 13 Reasons Why with water. And she had actually gone under and shot herself, though, just behind her right ear.
You know, Anna, I mean, Patrice, little girls, I mean, I still remember this like it was yesterday. There are a lot of hormones that rage in the body of a 13, 12, 11-year-old girl, 15, go on if you want. Girls are notoriously emotional. So I know that I'm sure Patrice was, Anna was not any different than that. But did you see signs? Was she a depressed girl? Was she concerned about relationships? Do you have a boyfriend breakup? Anything like that?
She had a lot of talent, and she was an athlete. And like I said, you know, you saw she was so beautiful. She always had somebody that would pick on her because they were jealous of her, envious, you know, of the things that she was able to do and just who she was as a person. But we thought we were dealing with those types of situations. And, you know, I had been to this school before to address certain issues, but not since she had been in middle school. She preferred to handle her own situations. And so we talked through every situation possible. We even talked about suicide. We were an extremely close family by all standards. And, you know, for her to have hidden that she watched this show was not typical of her character at all. This is the child that watched every episode of My Little Pony up until her teenage years and up through her teenage years. And so we think that when we got home from our vacation that she actually, while we were unpacking and getting our house situated, that she was kind of watching on her phone as she could, and that she engaged in family meals, and, you know, she was with us, but there was nothing out of the ordinary for a teenage girl. She would go in her room for hours at a time, but she taught herself to draw and do photography and sign language and music. She was always learning something, and you know, so it wasn't something that we noticed that she, you know, just exhibited profound symptoms of depression. But we believe that she was depressed, and her pediatrician has pretty much confirmed that for us. But, you know, as far as being an atypical teenager, there really wasn't that. I mean, there was a little withdrawing and a little negativity about herself, but we just thought and were told by any other parent that that was typical teenager behavior.
Yeah, which I would say so, too. And, you know, I have to say, drop into this conversation that Anna is not the only person that's taken her life and imitated the suicide on 13 Reasons Why. A girl named Bella Herndon and Priscilla Chu, both 15-year-olds from California, did the same thing. A 23-year-old Peruvian man, Franco Alonso Lezo Medrano, has also done the same thing and left behind recordings that mimicked what happened in 13 Reasons Why. You contacted American Family Association, Patrice, which was pretty courageous, and I saw the video of you and your husband. It was, It's just really hard to watch my, and all of us, you know, it's just unfathomable to lose a child in this manner. But I want to ask you this. It was obvious from that tape and from your husband's comments there that you guys have deep faith. And I know personally that that deep faith doesn't spring up overnight. And certainly, I think more often does not happen in the face of tragedy. If you have that kind of faith that manifests itself in the midst of that kind of tragedy, it was there already. So that's what I want to ask you about. You and your husband and your families, well, you can't claim faith for your family, but what person, your personal faith in Christ, what was, just in a word, where did that come from and how did that affect how you took this news?
My husband and I are both born-again Christians. I came to know the Lord in college out of a philosophy class, ironically. It's a great story. I'll have to tell you sometime.
All right. I'd love to hear it. I'd love to hear it.
But just goes to show that Christ can reach you anywhere you are. My husband is a former minister. He had actually just resigned the ministry 3 weeks or so before Anna took her life. And we had been pastoring a small rural church that was about an hour away from us. And we love the people so much, and we still stay in close contact with them. But we just felt like we needed to be in a church in our community and that our children needed to be a part of a youth group. And so that's why, essentially, he resigned the ministry there. Anna was also a born-again Christian. She received the Lord at the age of 8 years old. I had the privilege of leading her to the Lord myself, and my son as well. Shortly before that, he was 4 years old. But so my children have grown up in church, and they came to know the Lord at young ages. But I believe that their faith was genuine. My son, he's 12 years old now. He was actually able to lead his best friend to the Lord after the tragedy had happened.
Oh, man.
So in the fall of this past year, he's a remarkable young man, and I just know that God has incredible plans for him. But we can't live without the Lord. Like I said, he has carried us every step of the way since this has happened. And he tells us he would in his word, Isaiah 46:4, that he would carry us until we're old and gray. And so we just trust him and we trust his word.
Yes, ma'am. I ditto that. And let me get practical for a second, because we're asking those of you listening to do something. We have a petition, a letter that we'd like for you to sign to beg and pressure in the most respectful but forceful way Netflix to stop this second season that begins tomorrow. You can go to afa.net, that's afa.net, and sign your name. You can see, if you go to afa.net, you'll see lots more about this story. You'll see the beautiful Anna and her mom and dad, and you'll hear more of the details that we are not able to get into. Patrice, I would just say this, you know, this was my experience in the sense that I had served the Lord for a long time before a lot of things happened in my life. And there comes a time when you just, it's hurt so much that sometimes you can't feel necessarily, this is my experience, it may not be sure. Yours, you can't necessarily feel God's presence. But because I had served him for so long and I had seen his hand in such a mighty way, there are times when we serve him with our mind. You know, we love him with our mind, our heart. And we love him with our whole being. And there's sometimes you have to depend on your mind to remember what God has done and trust him, as you just expressed. Trust him, even though you don't know what that means. But it sounds like you're seeing some tangible fruit through your son. God does not waste tragedy, as you well know. What are you hoping to accomplish? Today you're going to be at AFA doing lots of interviews. What would be the best outcome here under these tragic circumstances from your perspective?
Well, the best outcome would obviously be for the show to be pulled. We realize and understand that we're not responsible for that outcome, though. We're only responsible for being obedient in this situation, and we want to provide the most awareness to parents who are willing to listen and want to help their children through these difficult times that they experience, and not to allow the devil to to influence them through watching things like this, and, you know, just to avoid watching something like this, to get that image in their head. And we just want them to choose more life-giving type shows and things that give hope. And this show is not one of those things that provides any type of hope.
Would you do anything differently about what your kids watch? Is there something you would say to parents listening? We only have less than a minute left, Patrice.
Well, I would obviously, you know, be much more involved. I mean, I was involved, and we looked at everything that they had looked at. Unfortunately, she had hidden this one from us by clicking on several different things so that we weren't able to see it. But maybe even limiting more the use of the devices and whatnot that bring these type images into their minds.
Maybe be willing to risk your kids getting a little angry with you in order
Absolutely.
To step in, as it's not worth it. Them liking you is not worth the loss of their lives.
Absolutely.
Anna Bright was lost because she watched 13 Reasons Why. What a tragedy. Go to AFA.net and sign the petition. Patrice. God bless you and your husband and your sweet son. I can't wait to see what beautiful things God's going to bring from this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.